Blog Talk Radio.
This is Equestrian Legacy Radio. Equestrian Legacy Radio is live talk radio for all equestrians and those that love the equestrian lifestyle.
Gotta give them hay, gotta go feed the horses because it's a brand new day. Gotta go feed the horses, gotta feed them now. Gotta go feed the horses because horses need the chow. No time for coffee, can't take time for me. Gotta take care of the animals, so many mouths to feed. Gotta go feed, got to go feed. Gotta go feed, gotta go. Gotta go feed the chicken, gotta gather eggs. Gotta go give them crack corn so they don't refuse to lay. Gotta go to the hen house before the morning's through. I can hear that rooster singing cock-a-doodle-doo. Procrastination, get out of that bed. Each and every morning, everybody must be fed. Gotta go feed, got to go feed, gotta go feed, gotta go feed, gotta.
You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, and we have a great show lined up for you today. We have joining us the amazing and beautiful Grammy-nominated Mary Ann Kennedy, as well as the five-star Pirelli instructor David Lichman. They'll be joining us later on in the show. But first, let me tell you about a special event that will be coming up this weekend in Nashville, Tennessee. Michael Martin Murphy joined us last week on the Campfire Cafe, and Michael will be doing a special performance at Two Old Hippies at 6 o'clock at 6 o'clock in the evening at the Gulch in Nashville, Tennessee. This is a special benefit to benefit the Fiona Rose Murphy Foundation, and more information can be found on his website. That's michaelmartinmurphy.com. You can pre-order your tickets there, but Equestrian Legacy Radio is going to be there this weekend, and so we invite you to join us at 6 o'clock at Two Old Hippies in the Gulch for a special concert with Michael Martin Murphy. And we'll be back in just a moment to talk with Mary Ann Kennedy.
Are you tired of not knowing how to market your business and increase your sales? Sick of spending your hard-earned money on advertising that is not reaching your target audience? Does it seem you are working in your business and not on your business? Meet Sales Creative. We are a full-service marketing agency that tailors our services to the small business owner. Our mantra is, if your business isn't selling, your business is dying. We use unique and custom campaigns that gets results and at an affordable monthly cost. Check us out at salescreative.net. Mention you heard it here and get a complimentary marketing analysis valued at $250. Don't delay. Call us today. See why hundreds of people have put their trust in us for over 6.5 years. That's salescreative.net.
It's all the same to me. The reason that my heart keeps beating inside. Horses and life. The passion was born at birth. Until my last day on earth, it'll be life.
That's Horses in Life with Mary Ann Kennedy, and we are just so pleased to have Mary Ann join us today. Mary Ann, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here, Gary.
Well, we've been looking forward to talking with you for weeks now, and so we're just so pleased that you could join us today. You know, our listeners are joining us from about 25 different countries today, as well as across the U.S. And as an introduction, tell us a little bit about how you got started with horses in your early life and about your early musical career.
Well, okay. Let me simply synopsize.
All right.
which is not that easy to do, but I am going to try to give the short version. You know, it's kind of like what the song just said, Horses and Life. I remember when my song, Born to Ride, the first line is, the very first word that I ever said, visions of galloping in my head. And, you know, I feel like I was just born like those of us who truly, truly love and need horses. I was born with it. So I was a little kid, and all I could do was ask for a horse. And I know a lot of little girls go through that phase, but, you know, of course, I'm one of those that never got out of it, like the true horse lovers. I guess the first pony I ever rode was a little pony named Twinkles that my grandfather up on the dairy farm in Wisconsin got for me and my cousin to share. In summers, I would ride her, and that's where I did the thing of, you know, getting drug and slipping off and getting bucked off and all those early lessons. And then I didn't have my very own till I was 12. And my family lived in the suburb of Milwaukee. And so that's when I begged and begged and begged and said, I will use all the money that I make playing on these little county fairs and things as part of the little country cousins, because I was part of the, you know, of a family band. I will use all my money if I can just buy a horse. And it all began then. And it's just always been horses and music for me, Gary. There's never been, you know, people would maybe consider other careers, you know, like, you know, I had, you know, fleeting thoughts of being a veterinarian or whatever, but, you know, I wasn't good enough at the math or the physics. And it was just a no-brainer for me. It's been music and horses. So.
Well, how old were you when you started in the music? You said you were playing at county fairs, and was that with cousins
and
family?
Yeah, I was. Well, my cousin and I were called the Little Country Cousins. Randy Cook, my dear cousin, who still, you know, lives up in Wisconsin. And my mom was very supportive. It was her side of the family that, you know, had the musical talent. My uncle, her brother, played steel guitar. So we had a family band, and we started doing that when I was, again, it was about 12 years old.
Wow.
Performing in the central Wisconsin and northern Wisconsin at various country fairs. I remember one time we got to open for Farron Young and Ferlin Husky, Patsy Montana, you know, the old country acts. And, of course, they weren't old then. But but it was such an honor, and so I kind of, you know, I had the support of being on stage and learning the whole professional entertainer role when I was young.
And when did you decide to go professional?
Well, you know, I like my dad said, well, honey, I want you to have something to fall back on. You know, if this performing thing doesn't work, you know, you need to go to college, which, you know, a good dad, you know.
Good dad.
So I did go to college, and because in high school, I was really involved in the choral side of music. And so I did go to college, UW, Wisconsin, and did get my degree in music education. And so I did teach. And all the while, you know, still horsing around. I still owned a horse. And I was performing on weekends at the couple different country clubs with you know, country and western bands in Milwaukee. But I did get my degree, and I taught choral music, junior high school, mind you.
Wow.
I was young enough to deal with it, and I was also young enough to kind of fit in, and you know, with the kids, and it was a great experience. I taught for only 2 years in Mukwonago, Wisconsin, at the junior high school choral music. Really loved it, but I knew during that time that I was really kind of born to do it and not teach it. And I knew that, you know, that trail to Nashville was calling. And so that's when I was 24 years old, just about 25. Yep. Way back in 1978, the summer of 1978, I moved to Nashville and to pursue my, you know, musical profession.
Well, how was that getting started in Nashville? That had to be kind of frightening to be a young girl coming from Wisconsin to Tennessee.
Yeah, it was quite a change. Thankfully, I had met some people in prior years of coming down to Nashville to the big CMA conventions and stuff, which they called them back then. And I had met a couple folks and had conversations with them and ended up actually signing with one person that my family had met and I had met before, and he believed in my talent, and that was Pete Drake, the great steel guitar player.
Right.
And he had a publishing company and was playing. I mean, shoot, I got to meet and play, sing on some of the records because he was playing on these records and producing. But shoot, I got to meet Lacey J. Dalton. I remember when she first came to town, I was at her first session. Tammy's sessions, even when I was just in town because of my connection through Pete Drake Productions. I remember Andy Williams came to town, and Pete was playing on that session. And I was allowed to be a little mouse and listen to that session. And he said, you know, darn it, I was supposed to do a duet on this song, but the great gal singer that I hired is really sick today. And Pete said, well, you got one right here.
Wow.
And I was like, what? And here I am, like, you know, 25, 26 years old. And he said, really? And he said, well, let me hear what you got. So I sang the duet part, and he said, you're hired. So things like that happened. I feel like I just had I had good people helping me in, and, you know, good luck usually equals good people.
Yeah, yeah, it really does. Hey, I got to tell you, and I sang a little bit when I was younger. My first talent contest that I ever performed in, I sang Moon River. Andy Williams, won my first $50, and that probably was the only money I ever made in the music business. But that's
pretty darn
cool
good for Nashville.
That was pretty good, an old country boy. But
yeah.
Now, not only have you had a tremendous career as a singer, but you have you're a fabulous writer. You have
okay.
written some great songs, and how did you get into writing?
You know, I guess that was kind of just, again, part of it. When you are a singer, I started writing when I was in college. You know, really, when I was supposed to be practicing my piano recitals, I was in there making up songs, as we called it. And that's why maybe my recitals weren't that great. But boy, I started writing some cool songs and realized, man, this just feels really good to be singing something that you wrote. And, of course, then when I moved here and that was just, you know, being a songwriter was, again, part of what the Pete Drake Productions was about, too. They had a publishing company. And
right.
He said, you know, I had played him some of the early things I had written, which, you know, were pretty bad. But he saw the potential. And, again, he set me up with some co-writes, as we all know about that here in Nashville. I mean, Nashville's, you know, the songwriting capital of the world. We have the best talent in the world here, players and songwriters, but especially songwriting capital. And the one of the first guys that I wrote with had already had some hits, and it's funny because he and I reunited over the last couple years writing with a new young artist named Caroline Cole. And the man's name is Don Goodman. And Don Goodman and Pam Rose and I penned our first big single, which was a Lee Greenwood single called Ring on Her Finger, Time on Her Hands.
Oh, yes.
Yes. And
great song.
And then, thank you. And that was one of the Grammy-nominated songs of the year that year. So, I was, again, good luck equals good people. I was helped, coached, and got to work with really, really good people and people who are better than me. And, you know, when you work with someone who's better than you are, you get better.
That's true. That is true. That is
true. Same with horsemanship, you know. It's kind of a rule. So that's how that happened. Lee Greenwood also singled Dixie Road.
Right.
And then there are others. You know, that's when the whole writing for a living, getting songs cut, oftentimes being hired to sing on the records, started.
Well, and you had another big one, I think, with Restless Heart. What was that one?
Yeah, that was the other Grammy-nominated song. That was in early 80s, and that was penned by, actually, there were four of us on that, a main team that I ended up writing with and performing with as well, with Pam Rose and then Pat Bunch. We also wrote another writer on that particular song. It's just how that one happened was the dearly departed Todd Cerny, who prematurely left the planet 2 years ago, early cancer. And but yeah, that was a big record for us, and Restless Heart released it, and really, really honored to be a part of that song.
Well, in addition to that, I think you and Pam Rose formed a group, and I shared with you the other day, I'd gone back and found some old video of you and Pam when you were Kennedy Rose, and you had a contract, you worked with Sting for quite a while.
Yeah, go figure, a couple country chicks out of Nashville singing together, and Sting ends up hearing about us. Go figure. that's what I mean. It's like, really? What?
Well, talent comes through in all genres of music, so that's great.
Well, thanks. It did turn out to be a really, really wonderful chapter. We made two records for Sting on a label that he had started for kind of music that wasn't quite fitting in an exact category. And the company was called Pangea Records, and we did a record in 91 and another record in 95. Got to tour all over the world with Sting and opened for him on a few different tours, and just great experiences.
Well, that's terrific. Now, and I'm pretty sure you didn't bring a horse to Nashville when you moved. So when did you get your first horse down here, and how did you involve or evolve into, because I know you're a Pirelli student. How did that happen? How did that come about?
Well, no, I didn't. In fact, I was so determined to move to Nashville, and I had to be able to afford it, that indeed I did sell my current quarter horse and my saddle and everything, so I had enough money to live on for a while here, and or when I first moved here, and so anyway, I continued to pursue my horsemanship. When I had my first hit single and I made a little money, guess what I bought?
I think I know what you bought.
Yeah, it was a horse. So got me back into horses, and I did. I bought a little Arab. And I ended up also buying my first Tennessee walking horse. And that's when I went, holy moly, you mean this is how these guys move? And I had never ridden a gated horse. And you know, that was eye-opening. Of course, I love both. I have gated horses and quarter horses right now. But in 1999, after going through various different horses and kind of living up to one of my songs called Green on Green Makes Black and Blue, I heard about this natural stuff. And, you know, I've been asking trainers, you know, the questions about more about the psychology, not just, okay, you use this leg, you use this rein, you sit like this, but what about the psychology? And, you know, I could just never find anyone to really, really teach me about the language of the horse. And then I heard about this Pirelli guy, and there was a man named David Lichman who was teaching a level one course over in Franklin. And I think that was 99, right around there. And I went over and watched all these, you know, ladies on the ground with their horses with these orange sticks. And I thought, oh, this is kind of weird, but, you know, it seems kind of neat that there's an actual system. And anyway, that's when I first saw David. And we didn't even connect at that clinic. I was there auditing. But I went to a Ray Hunt clinic right after that, and that blew my mind. And then I got home, and I couldn't retain any of it. And, you know, I didn't have a system. And that's when I went back and started seriously on the Pirelli path, because they had it so organized that you could have your little booklets and your tapes and now it's DVDs and watch and go out in the arena and practice. And I just still think it's a fabulous way to really, really enhance your horsemanship.
How has that changed the way, Mary Ann, that you've connected with your horses since then?
Oh, unbelievable. It's just on every level. It's about having a relationship and really learning to speak their language. I think that was the biggest change, was learning to speak their language instead of expecting them to speak mine. And I think that's what so many horsemen who have not been exposed to this way of thinking are dealing with. So just learning to speak their language, I mean, then they look up to you as a leader, not just someone shouting, you know, in the English language or whatever language at them.
Right.
Or even if you're not shouting, but speaking. But it's all about understanding how they relate with each other and how they find comfort and safety. And that's all about the release. And so it's just really, really changed everything.
Yeah.
And then that's what starts it. And then, of course, the rest, technique and all, follows.
And I guess that has affected some of your writing and the songs that you've been writing for the last couple of years.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and that's, I guess, the next chapter was, okay, and then what combined my love of horses with my career of being a musician? And that was in 2000 when a little spotted saddle horse colt that I had raised out of my first walking mare was 9 years old, and I ended up losing him prematurely. And it really, you know, it really broke my heart. At the same time, I also lost my little pug dog who had been on tours with Emmy Lou and Sting, and she was like my little soul dog. They had the same birthday, Gary.
Oh, wow.
And then they ended up dying within 4 days of each other. And that's when I was like, wow. I mean, it shook my world. And I started writing. I sat down with a guitar, and some songs just started coming out, you know, dealing with this grief and looking back at the fond memories. And that's when I started writing my first CD, which is called The Trail Less Traveled.
Right. And what was that horse's name?
That horse's name was Tonka.
Yeah.
After the old Disney movie with the little Indian boy. I always loved that name, and I thought if I ever had my own horse, I'd name him Tonka. And I did. And so hence Tonka Records. I named my record company after him.
Right.
And like I said, it was also the time that I had discovered the same, time frame that I discovered natural horsemanship. So it all came together. And that's kind of what you hear in my horse lover's music.
Yeah. Well, your music is amazing. And the first time that I ever heard Marianne Kennedy's song, I had been to a equine event in Franklin, Tennessee, and stopped by a horse rescue booth that was there. And if you made a donation, you got a Marianne Kennedy CD. And so that was that was the road less traveled. And I have played that CD for so many people, and I said, you've just got to listen to this lady's music because it touches you at so many different levels. One of the songs on there is Barn Cat, and we're not going to play that today, but that will just make you laugh. And then another song, and I told you this the other day, we can't play this on the program. It's the song Goodbye, and that will bring you to tears. That will absolutely
thank
bring
you.
To
yes, it's a true story, and I've had more emails and letters and comments from folks who said, it does make me cry, but then a couple songs later I'm laughing when Blue Heeler comes out on her Barn Cat. But the point of that it makes you cry is that, I guess those are tears that need to be shed, and honored that, these animals touch our lives that deeply, and to not make light of it, that when we lose them, it does leave a hole in our heart. And those of us who love them that way need to honor that. And sometimes music opens the heart even more.
Well, it really does, and you just have such great music, and it touches people, whether you love horses or dogs or other folks, and so
right.
It's just terrific. It really is terrific. We're going to be talking with David Litchman in just a little bit, and I know David is traveling. He's on his North America tour, and he was a little trying to figure out what time to be calling in, and so we're expecting David to reach out and touch us and call us in just a little bit. But, so while we're waiting to talk with David, there's another song that I want to play, and that's one that you wrote called When You Carry Me. And can you tell us a little bit about what was the inspiration for this song?
Yeah, for sure. That was a Linda Perelli request to write her a theme song.
Uh-huh.
Of course, there was no title. She just said, hey, Marianne, because, again, after I got involved with the Pirellis, some of their people, knew about my music. Anyway, the rest, as they say, is history. So it's all evolved, and I feel like they're another family, the Pirelli family.
Right.
And David is just, I consider him one of my best friends. I'm so honored because he's such a fine person, number one, and fine horseman, number two. And he's also a musician. You'll have
right.
to ask him about that.
We'll
he's
ask him about
bass,
that.
Bass player. Okay.
Yeah,
but
we'll ask him about that.
Linda said, Marianne, I want you to write me a theme song for fluidity. And I went, oh, okay. And I'm thinking, oh, no, what rhymes with fluidity? And that's the old, line. And really, seriously, that's what I thought. First thing, it's like, oh, sure.
Right.
But I took on the assignment, and I took it to heart, and I was very honored. And that's when I wrote When You Carry Me.
Okay.
And so there's the intro to that song.
All right. Well, let's listen to When You Carry Me, and we'll be talking with David Litchman shortly as well. So When You Carry Me by Marianne Kennedy.
Thank you.
What is this love that runs so deep? We try to be the best that we can be for them with every stride and every move. It's up to us to prove. It is a dance between horse and man, spirits in unity. I will be true when I ride you in perfect harmony. Are big, their bodies strong, their feet are sure. It's up to us to mirror them with every step and every touch. We will earn their trust. It is a dance between horse and man.
Legacy Radio, and that was Mary Ann Kennedy's beautiful song, When You Carry Me. And we're joined now by Mr. David Litchman, and Mary Ann is back on the line with us as well. So, David, welcome to the show today.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Well, we're so glad to have you join us, and this song is a great lead-in because you are a five-star Pirelli instructor. And first of all, let me ask you what a five-star instructor is.
Well, right before I answer that, hi, Mary Ann.
Yeah, I can't stand it. Hi, David.
Okay. See you Thursday.
Yeah.
I'm looking at a picture on Mary Ann's website on her gallery of her and Sister Patty on a plastic rocking horse as we speak. And I gotta tell you that on my Facebook page I posted a similar picture, and I'm a little older than Mary Ann. My rocking horse was made out of wood, but I had the little outfit with the little guns and as luck would have it, a Tyrolean hat for some reason. but on this tour, I can't remember where we were. I think we were in Lansing, Michigan. We went and stopped at an antique mall, and I found the same model horse. And I got a picture of me on that now, because I'm a lot bigger now.
I saw that on Facebook. I love it.
But yeah, we have similar beginnings. But five-star Pirelli instructor. I'm very grateful to Pat Pirelli for almost everything that I've learned in this horsemanship. If I didn't learn it from him, he set me up to be able to learn it. I never would have gotten to the places I've gotten without him, and I'm deeply appreciative of that. And five stars is almost the highest rating he gives. I was in the top group of instructors at each time that the bar was raised, and I was in the very first group of U.S. instructors here in the United States, started in 1994.
Wow. Wow. Well, the first time that I saw you, David, was in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and you were doing a clinic at the Tennessee Livestock Pavilion. And that was quite an experience. And I had two questions in my mind when I saw you. And number one is, how do you get a mustache that looks like that and keep it that way?
Styling gel.
Styling gel. Okay, that answers that question.
Spiking gel, what the kids use to keep their mohawks in place. That's nice.
Right. Well, and the other part was, how do I learn to do the things with horses that you're doing? But before we go into that, let me ask you a little bit about your early beginnings with horses, because, again, our listeners always like to know a little bit of the background of folks that are on the program. And what was your earliest experience with horses, and how did you get started?
Well, just like I said, I had my little rocking horse, and there's something about horses that it's either inside of you trying to take over, or it's not. And it was definitely inside of me. I did not come from a horsey family for the previous two generations. My great-grandfather was a horse trainer in Germany, but I never knew him, and I never went to Germany until long after he was gone. But that's something about the genetics of that, or something inside of me was just waiting to get out. And as soon as I saw the Lone Ranger on TV, I was hooked. That white horse standing on his hind legs, that was something else. So anytime I could get to a pony ride or a trail ride or a lesson or anything, I didn't live in a place where there were a lot of horses. I lived outside of Boston. Uh-huh. And that's where I'm calling you from right now, in fact.
Yeah.
And
all right.
And and so, I did find there was a guy that had a small stable near the junior high, and I would go down there afternoons and muck stalls in exchange to get a couple lessons here and there. And then I begged, borrowed, and stole my way to get to a little one-week-long horse camp in upstate New York and a couple of places in New Hampshire, and went for a week. But that was about it. I never really got immersed in it. And then I went away to school, and I went to college and started playing music, and all that horse stuff just went into the background. And then when I was 33 and I got married out in California, I don't know what happened. My wife and I looked at each other and just said something about horses. And she said, well, I've always wanted to have horses. And I said, geez, I've always wanted to have horses. And we became one of those dual income, no kid families,
Right, right.
You can call them dink. And we were a couple of dinks, so we had some expendable income. We got a little place, and that's still where we live today. A little 2-acre place with put up a barn, and started getting into horses in a more serious way. And then from there, we ended up getting walking horses as our first horses, and then we started showing them. And I think you were wrong about the first time you saw me, because you told me earlier that you saw me in 1991 win a World Grand Championship in Shelbyville.
Well, that's right.
There you go.
Which was before that class.
That's right. That's
Murfreesboro.
Right. I stand corrected on that.
So that led me all the way to there, and I had before the World Grand Championship, I ran into Pat Pirelli in 1986. And between Ray Hunt, see, Marion and I had the same experience. We showed up at a Ray Hunt thing, and oh my God, this old man would sit there and his finger would shake and he'd go, well, pretty quick here, this colt going to come around here to the left. And then, gosh darn it, the thing would turn around to the left. And he'd do that like 100 times in a row. And next thing you know, he's on it. And next day, he's starting colts from that colt. And I went, oh, my God.
Wow.
People sitting here have no idea how good this man is. And then next year, Pat Pirelli showed up, and he had a pathway to get there. You know, I could do some of the stuff that Ray did just from watching him, you know, maybe, you know, a tenth of a percent, but I sort of got the concept. But Pat really laid it out to a way that you could understand it. And that back then it was just the book, just a natural horsemanship book.
Right.
So that's how we got going. And since then, I've been all over the world teaching it and learning from all my students as I go.
Well, and there's a real connection that people have with horses when they actually spend the time to try to connect. And, you know, I guess my background is a little bit different. I was thinking this morning, I don't ever remember my life without horses in it. My dad loved horses. I actually have a picture that's sitting behind me where the only thing he had to ride was a Black Angus calf. And he probably was about 6 years old, and he was dressed up and had a hay bale halter made out of that twine.
Baling twine.
Baling twine, yeah, and sitting on his calf, and he had a little calf and was all dressed up. And I don't know how they happened to take pictures at that time, because that probably was around 1920. But from there, he went to horses and was never without them after that. So a real connection that goes along with it. What, David, what was it that caused you to take the Pirelli route and continue on and do what you're doing now?
Well, when I started, like I said, in 86, I started following Pat. And he lived about 45 minutes from me in California. And I belonged to his little club, and he'd send me a thing. First thing, he's tried to sell me a special lead rope, and I said, I'm going to pay $25 for that thing, or whatever it was, you know, at the time. And I tell everybody, you should see the anchor chain I made, trying to think I could do it better myself. And then he'd send me a thing, oh, come down to the rendezvous, and I'd be there on the fence watching everything they would do. But when he would send me a thing that says, come ride with me for a week, $400 for a week. I said, $400? You kidding me? Well, it turns out it cost me a lot more to get to Colorado and haul horses and find a place to stay. And I missed some opportunities there, but obviously I wasn't ready.
Yeah.
But I kept following his stuff. And then when I was teaching gated horse folks after the World Grand Championship, when I went around trying to help people get better results with their gated horses, and I sort of understood the Pirelli program at that point, and I'd show up, and they couldn't lead their horses from the trailer to the arena, and they couldn't trailer their horses sometimes, and they couldn't get on, and they were getting bucked off, and I said, well, you guys aren't ready to learn about how to teach horses about gating. You need a foundation course. So I started teaching Pat's material, and we needed halters and lead ropes and sticks and books, so I called him up and I said, hey, I'm doing this. Can I buy them wholesale from you? And he said, sure, become one of my instructors. And that just took off like wildfire. And the first group of course instructors, they would send me out to teach for them. You know, they'd line it all up, and I'd just show up and teach, and they would pay me. And then we became independent contractors, and now we have, you know, we're licensed professionals under his guidance. Never look back.
Yeah. Now, what was your professional background before this? I guess you do this on a full time basis now.
Yes, this is full time for me now. And when I left college, I didn't finish college. I went on the road playing bass in various bands, and I like to say, then I'm as good on the bass as Marianne is with horses, but I'm not so sure. She's getting pretty darn good with her horses, and I haven't really improved much. But anyway, I did that for 10 years, and we traveled all over, and you know, I'm familiar with life on the road. And when I landed in California, I ended up getting a degree in software engineering, and I went to work for about 7 years doing that. I ended up being a contract software engineer for IBM. It was the last big gig that I had. And I found myself sitting in the cubicle one day looking at pictures of horses on the wall and getting about 3 lines of code written in an afternoon, and I'd say, nah, I need to move. And that's when I started training horses, and that's a job, a thankless job, boy. I took 10 horses in training. I was talking to you about Jack Kincaid earlier today, and
that's
Jack,
right.
he grew up on Hollinsdale Farm as a young boy. I'm not sure what his relationship with his parents were, but he ended up kind of being raised there, and he was nice enough to send me a bunch of horses to train right after I won my World Grand Championship, get me started in the training business. And I ended up with 10 horses in the barn, and I get 4 done the first day, and next day I do the next 4, and now the third day come along, I still hadn't done the 2 of them, hadn't gotten ridden yet, and it was time to ride the first 4 again, and boy, that's hard work. I got a lot of respect for anybody who's doing that in a natural way.
Right.
I mean, you can
right.
crank them out 15 minutes of riding each, but that's not really getting the job done. And so then the teaching started. A good friend of mine, Jackie Barton, she said, why don't you teach this stuff? And the very first clinic, very first rider comes in, and she's flying all over the place on her walking horse, and she can't get control, and the reins are flopping all over the place. And I said, grab the reins. She's out of control. And I said, pick up the reins with 2 hands. And she looked at me and she said, I only have 1 hand. My very first lesson. My very first student. Yeah, and then she had this prosthetic arm that looked so natural.
Oh, my
goodness. So I had ridden in a lot of egg and spoon classes and champagne glass classes, water glass classes, you know, and with the walking horses. And I said, put the reins in your teeth, slide the other hand down. Because I had done that a number of times, and then we proceeded to talk about getting the horse under control and making things work.
Well, that is neat, and it's interesting how people transition from one career to the next career to the next career, and you do a fabulous job with what you do, and I've gone back and looked at several of your videos, and it's just amazing the things that you do. And something that's kind of near and dear to my heart is some work that you've been doing with special needs kids. And I actually looked at a video this morning of Autism Dance and Horse Project. How does the relationship, David, with special needs children and horses work?
Well, it works the same way it works for everybody. It's just a little more obvious with special needs kids, and that is that the horses are healing for humans. That's the only thing I can say. They take you. You may not be learning the lesson you thought you were going to learn, but they'll teach you along the way what it is you need to know, and they can be healing for those that have trouble healing themselves. And the first experience I had was when I was training horses, and I was out at the barn all the time. They had a little therapeutic riding thing going, and there was a kid there, autistic kid, never been on a horse, not really communicating or making eye contact with anybody, and 10 minutes after they put him up on the horse, he was playing ball, catching a ball, throwing a ball from the back of the horse, and within 2 weeks, he was talking, and he was, they had him cleaning the horse's feet out at the barn, and at home, he would get a screwdriver, and when people would come in the door, he'd pick their shoes out with the screwdriver, and this is... it's phenomenal how much of a change there was just from sitting on a horse.
Right.
And I've seen it over and over and over again. And just on this last tour, we did a thing up in Montana with Operation Second Chance for wounded war veterans. And there's a guy up there who this year is running the course, running the retreat. And the year before, he was a... he was a person in need, and I heard an interview with him where he said that he got back, and after all the doctors and all the stuff that he had been through. He would just be sitting around the house and you know, he was suffering and just dying. Basically, he said, "I was dying from the inside out." And his wife dragged him out there to Montana, and the first thing they do with these guys, they put him on a horse. And he said within 5 minutes of sitting on that horse, he started to live again. And he says, "This program saved my life." He says, I was for sure going to die. And not many people know this, and I'm not sure. I cannot understand why. 22 to 23 veterans in the U.S. commit suicide every day.
Mercy. Oof.
There's 8,000 some in a year. There's if we had 150 people a week dying in airplane crashes, it'd be all over the news. You know, every
right.
week we'd see that. But no, it's just kind of a hidden fact. And you know, there's other places where we lose that many people. Drunk driving. I'm really highly opinionated about how that's affecting people's lives. But that's something that people do to themselves. This veteran thing is something we did. You know, we put them there.
Yeah.
Right.
We have a responsibility to help them get their lives back.
Yeah.
It's shocking. So these guys are doing it one guy at a time, and there's other places that I've been that are doing it one guy at a time, and they're working with PTSD, and they're working with guys whose legs are blown off, and they get on a horse, and they can run for the first time since the war. You know, this is profound stuff.
It is. It is.
And I really didn't have that much to do with it. I just trying to make people aware that the horses can do that. The people who are out there in the trenches doing this every day, setting up the stables and putting their hard-earned money where their mouth is about helping these people. This is the way the real work is getting done. But it's not enough. It's never enough. Yeah.
Well, that's true, and programs that work with veterans, programs that work with these special needs children are very invaluable and important, and it kind of answers the question that I was going to ask, and that is, why do you do what you do?
Well, you know, I'd like to say that was all, you know, this was my whole big goal on coming on this tour, but really the tour started with the idea that I would be the prodigal son returning home and get my horses on the beach where I grew up, because I remember one time seeing a hoof print on that beach and thinking, where the heck is there a horse around here, and who took it on the beach? And I grew up on, you know, on the coast, and that memory sort of went away until recently, and I thought, I'd like to bring my horses back there. So I said, how am I going to do that? And I started this idea of visiting my friends across the way and teaching across the way, and then I thought, I really would like to start performing. I think my horses are ready to do a show by themselves and not just be a spotlight in somebody else's show. And I worked, you know, 8 months getting them ready for that. And I decided at that time that it would be really a win-win situation if I could help out an organization in each town.
Right.
And,
right.
And my friend Bettina Cole, she's a member of PATH, and she contacted these organizations all the way across the country, and we partnered up, and we've been doing pretty good. I think we, you know, at the end of the day, my goal was to see if we could reach 20 grand raised for these organizations, and I think we're gonna break 10 anyway.
Well, that's great.
Yeah,
now, when we're going to take just a break, and there's a song that I think that Mary Ann did that we want to play right now called Who Saved Who? And we're going to talk more about this North American tour that you're doing right now and where you'll be and how it benefits people. So we're going to listen through Who Saved Who, and we'll be right back with Mary Ann Kennedy and David Litchman.
And right before your eyes, an
open heart wants to be your home. Unwanted, unneeded, now there is love. Who saved who to the world? It looks like I saved you. Who saved who? We both know the truth. Your fate can change in just one day. No matter who you are, life is better when you share the way. I ask you, who rescued, who needed more?
Equestrian Legacy Radio, and we're talking with Mary Ann Kennedy and David Lichtman. And, I mean, that song kind of says it all, David, as far as what you're doing with this North American tour. I know you started that back in August in Moscow, Idaho, and you're continuing the tour right now. But what was the genesis of the tour? What was the reason for deciding to do this?
Well, like I said, I wanted to get to Boston to bring my horses back to my native stomping grounds here, and we are inches away from that at the moment. Actually, the horses are about 8 miles from here. I'm close to the beach right now, and we will be there tomorrow. Although I did happen to notice that there's a lot of construction and the police are all around the spot where I was planned, so we're going to have to go early in the morning before anybody wakes up. So, you know, that was the genesis, and, you know, to be able to tour with the horses is, you know, somebody asked me if am I going to get, you know, lonely on the road, and I, you know, just rolled off the top of my tongue. I just said, well, I got the horses with me. They, you know, I could spend all day with them. They're, you know, they're not, they're like family. They're not like pets.
Family.
Yep, yeah, they really are. And we've had our share of trials and tribulations along the way, but we made it. We're here, and we're going to keep going. And from here, we go down to the incredible Biltmore house in Asheville, North Carolina, and that's an incredible story there. The heirs to the Biltmore estate are horse people and Prolly fans. So Marion and I are going to meet up there, and she's going to sing for me while I play. This has only ever happened once before, and it just thrills me.
Let me ask this question, and we're excited that Mary Ann's going to be performing with you at the Biltmore as well as in Shelbyville, Tennessee, in early part of October, and we'll talk about those dates a little bit more, but how did you two finally meet? And Mary Ann, you can tell your side of it, and we'll see if David's matches.
Uh-oh.
Oh, I can start?
Yeah, you can start.
Well, like I said earlier, when I discovered Prolly, I saw David in, wasn't that 99 when you were at Peachtree?
It melted.
Okay, 98 or 99. I think it was 99. And, of course, we didn't meet then. But that's when David was just starting to, I guess he had been doing it for a few years. Anyway, so I saw him there, and it was a level one clinic. But then I took my gray quarter horse, Rio, who's now another one of my spirit horses, but at the time he was my leveled horse, my, as Pat says, sacrificial lamb. And he forgave me a zillion times because I was just, learning. I was relearning and unlearning and starting to get a little bit of savvy. Well, I heard about David Lichtman was giving a clinic in Kentucky. I think it was the Lexington area. And so I hauled up there, and then I rode Rio in that level two clinic, whatever I think it was. I was level two. And I remember thinking, wow, he's amazing. And, he's a musician too. I was talking with one of his coordinators there, Karen Jones. And I said, I really want to share my music with him. So I left. That's when, David, I left you with The Trail Less Traveled. And really, we didn't connect till after you lived with the music. I mean, other than me being the student and you being the wonderful teacher, but we didn't connect till after you lived with my music. I think you contacted me and said, "Wow, okay, I get this. Really gets to me." And then we started talking about music and horses, and the rest, as they say, is history. We've been, grown into a neat friendship over the last, 10, 11 years.
It's longer now.
Yeah.
Well, so, yeah, my recollection is a little bit, tiny bit different, because prior to that, I don't remember you being at Miss Polly's place over there in Franklin, but, I don't remember.
No, we didn't.
I remember two people from there. That was Carol Camp and Charlie Deschler. They put a big stamp in my brain from that course. And Charlie's horse kicked me in the butt. And I'm sure Mary Ann did not kick me in the butt that day.
Goodbye, Charlie. Okay.
That's like she may have since then. I don't know.
Not at all.
Okay.
But anyway, so she showed up at the Prolly Ranch. She had a little booth at one of the conferences. And I walked by, and she was sitting there with a guitar, and another folk singer trying to do something off of the Prolly name. And I walked by, and I didn't give it two shakes. I really did a disservice to myself. And then when she came to the course, I realized that she was, she was a musician. We talked about it a little bit, and I kept trying to get her to sing while we were on this ride. We were going out in this big field, this big cross-country course or something, and there were cows
We were
following cows, and Sam Beachboard was with us, and we were going down the trail. I kept trying to get her to sing, and she wouldn't open her mouth. What the hell is this about? But I later discovered that, many of our conversations, I'm talking about music and she's talking about horses. It takes a while for us to settle down enough to actually communicate.
Oh, goodness.
And then we went from there. And then you know, more recently, I started using her music more and more and more in the classes. And then we collaborated on a project with Joanna Mendelshaw from Dancing with Horses, and she sang and live, and we did a Dancing with Horses project with horses and riders and dancers from Juilliard. It was just phenomenal. And I started to get this idea that riding to music was going to be helpful to the students, and I've been doing that in the classes for 8 years now. And then Marianne was doing a new CD, and she said, you know, what tempo would you like to have for a song about riding to music? And we collaborated a little, just a tiny bit, and she came out with the Rhythm of the Ride, and I said, this is the signature. I mean, just the title alone tells you.
Right.
So that's the signature song. Every course I do, students ride to that song, and others. And I think this idea about combining music and horsemanship, it has value, of course, to the music, which we've been talking about for the last hour. But it has value to the horsemanship as well, and it's a full circle. Comes right back around that these people, and I'm going to say it for Marianne just in case she doesn't, but she says music takes you out of your thinking space and into your feeling space. And from the horseman's point of view, the horses love that. They absolutely love that. And in every week in my classes, I have 12 riders come back and say, oh my God, I had so much fun, and I'm finally able to let go, and I've never felt like that when riding, and, you know, it got rid of all of the stuff that I'm doing when I'm trying to ride, and just let's just enjoy the ride. And that doesn't happen very often in classes, and so I'm grateful to Marianne for her assistance with that as well.
Well, I think that for all of us that love horses, there's a connection there, and for those of us that love music, there's a connection there, and so it's just the perfect combination to put together, and her music and the work that you do is just a great pairing, and so we're excited to have the two of you joining us on here for this show to talk about both of those things. And
the horses are very rhythmic animals, and that's the foundation of the deal here. Is you get in sync with the music, the horse gets in sync with the music, you get in sync with the horse, then all of a sudden it clicks.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit, David, about the event, and then when we come to Asheville, or we come to Shelbyville, or to Texas for the last three parts of the tour. Actually, what are we going to be seeing?
Well, at each of the venues on Friday night, I'm being hosted by a charity in Asheville. It's a youth organization. In Shelbyville, it's a school that deals with that really is being powerfully helpful with disadvantaged kids, and they take them out to the farm where I'm going to be performing, and give them a chance to experience a horse firsthand. And then in Texas, we're going to team up with the Horse Boy, and he's made quite a name for himself. There was a movie and a book. I recommend the book and the movie, but the book especially, about how his out of control 4-year-old screaming, non-communicative, incontinent a 4-year-old son was healed through horses and horsemanship. And he's got a whole program for autistic families based around his experiences with that. He's a writer. He's not a psychologist, but he did this from the ground up because he had to.
Right.
So each of those Friday night performances, I will have someone from the representative from the charity do something or speak or bring some horses out, and then I will do my horsemanship. It's about, I think it's a half hour to 45 minutes of stuff that I do, and I worried that it was going to be too slow paced, that it wasn't going to be, you know, zing 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 like a circus to hold people's attention, but people are riveted. The slower I go, the more riveted they get, which really makes it easy for me to try to do something with the horses and show that you know, that I'm not making them do this, that they have a choice, and I have to try to, you know, come to an agreement with them and convince them that it's a good idea, and they have to be willing. And it shows. You know, the comments we get are that the relationship is just glaring through, that these horses love me and I love them, and that's the main message. In the show, I do some sort of high school dressage things, but it's done to music, and I try to be specific about matching the beats and music, and then I play at liberty with the other two boys while I'm still riding him, and then we strip down the saddle, and I play at liberty with all three, and I'll ride them bareback and bridleless, and then at the end of that session, we do a question and answer.
Okay.
And I thought people would be leaving during that.
and
they're not. They're sticking around and they're asking great questions. And we've had between 100 and 350 people at each one of these things. And they're asking great questions. And I spend quite a bit of time answering questions. And then I have a special surprise, which I will not disclose on the radio, but you'll have to come out and see it. But something that has never, in each of the places I've been, has never been done before with a horse. And then I do a presentation on music and horsemanship and how you can use the music to help yourself find various tempos within gaits, and how to get, you know, how to stretch and make the horses more flexible with their tempos, and how to have fun with it. And we do walk, trot, and canter demos. And then now it's like 9 o'clock at night, and by the time we get through wrapping up, it's 10, and then I'm up 6 the next morning getting ready to teach 2 days of horsemanship to the dedicated students that have signed up for the course.
Okay, so in addition to the Friday evening performances, then you're doing a couple of days of a clinic.
Yeah,
to go along with it. Great.
That's what pays the bills to get to the next place.
Gotcha. And let's mention too that a portion of the proceeds from each of the shows are going to these charities to benefit the work that they're doing as well.
Yeah, I'm splitting the gross ticket sales, and I'm covering all the expenses. So basically, the Friday nights cover, all the profit goes to them.
Okay.
I take care of all the renting the facility and the seating and the porta potties and the advertising, and so they're getting half of the gross, which is I think it's win-win because I get to play in front of a group of people, which I wouldn't normally get to do. Otherwise, I'd just be in my backyard doing it for myself. So.
Well, and you're making a lot of converts to natural horsemanship as you're doing this as well. So.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
It really is a win-win. Mary Ann, are you excited about the two dates that you're going to be doing?
Oh, yeah, I'm just thrilled. To get to sing and watch David with, have his magical experience with the horses, to be a part of that, but also just to spend some time with David and man, I mean, what's not to love? I get to go to the Biltmore and hang out with those great people and that beautiful, beautiful estate. And then we're coming back to the Nashville area, and then in Shelbyville's next, and so that's all starts next Thursday. So yes, I am really excited. I can't wait to see you, David.
Yeah, likewise. Now I've been to Nashville many, many times, and visited with Mary Ann, and it's always like, we never got to get out to her ranch to play with her horses. And so the last two times I said, I'm coming. I don't care how tired you are. I don't care how tired I am. I'm going to spend 2 days with you. So the last two times I came, we spent horsemanship time together. That was so gratifying to me to watch her with her critters. This woman is so dedicated to her animals. And, sometimes I would like to see her get you know, the horse of her dreams, and sometimes say, please don't get another one. because you're stretching yourself so thin taking care of these guys. She is 1,000% dedicated to these animals. And it's not just the horses. It's the cats and the dogs and the chickens and the donkeys. And, you know, and I'm kind of the same way. We have four rescue dogs, four rescue cats at the house. It's a lot of work, and it's a labor of love. So I'm really looking forward. Again, we're going to spend 2 days before I go down to the venue with Marianne at her house just playing with horses, and that's going to be a highlight for me.
Well, and, gosh, for me as well, needless to say, and my horses. And for you, I'm so excited for you to see some of the results with my little, you know, rescue mare that you initiated. You really initiated her healing. And anyway, her name's Callie.
Yeah,
so we're,
yeah that was, that was some really good stuff. I really enjoyed that process the most, because she'd been, before you got her, she'd been through, bucked off a half a dozen trainers, and even with you trying to help her, she bucked off another half a dozen. And and we had Marianne sitting on her bareback moving around on the first day. I thought that was pretty cool. She probably had her heart in her throat, but I was liking it.
It was pert near in my throat. it was great. I trust what David was doing, and he gets, again, great horsemanship. It's psychology. It's getting through to their minds and their hearts. And boy, he's one of the best I know at it.
Well, and so the other thing Marianne did for me was, I don't know, it was several years ago now that she got me a private lesson with one of her studio musicians, the great Byron House. Byron in the house gave me a private lesson while he was doing a track for her. And it's, I'm so frustrated because it's exactly what I tell my students. I'm not going to tell you what you want to hear. I'm going to tell you what you need to know.
I went home
and I got the metronome out and I started playing quarter notes to the metronome. It's like, I did not want to hear that.
Back to the basics, right? Fundamentals.
Yep.
Always fundamentals. Yeah.
Always fundamentals. Well, listen, it's been great to have both of you on the show today, and excuse me. Again, let's just mention that David's North American tour will be September the 27th in Asheville, North Carolina at the Biltmore, and then October the 4th in Shelbyville, Tennessee at Clearview Horse Farm, and then concluding on October the 11th in Taylor, Texas at the Taylor Rodeo Arena. And showtimes for all of those events are at 7 o'clock. And, David, can they get tickets on your website?
Yeah, absolutely. This week, I think the ticket sales cut off about Wednesday, so that they can make sure that everybody gets is on the list at the door. And the Biltmore requires that you go onto the estate, and you have to get your name on the list. So you will not be able to just walk in at the Biltmore unless you buy a ticket to get into the Biltmore estate. I don't know what that is, but it'll be more challenging. It'd be much easier if you call them and get your name on the list. I believe you could pay for it at the door, but you can't just assume if you don't call in advance. And
okay,
all that information is on my website.
And that's davidlichman.com?
Yes.
Okay. DavidLichman.com. You can see his tour dates there and ticket information as well. And Marianne, your website is MarianneKennedy.com. And I encourage everybody to go and visit both of those websites. Marianne's music can be bought from there. You can pick up her CDs on iTunes. And I tell you what, her music is just amazing, and it will make you laugh, and it will make you cry. And looking forward to seeing both of you perform in Shelbyville, Tennessee, because that's closest to me. And I certainly
and I
have
promise
that on.
That your horses, I promise that your horses will love the music too, or your money back.
Well, I tell you, if you want to buy them, we'll have the CDs for sale, and you can get them signed by Marianne at the event. So, come on down.
That's great. Well, listen, we encourage everybody to do that. And so, this has been a great show. Love talking with both of you, and We encourage folks that if you're in the area that David's going to be doing the last two or last three events in Asheville or in Shelbyville or in Tyler, Texas, to be sure and put that on your schedule. So
I think the last one is in, I think it's Taylor, which is close to Austin.
Taylor, Texas, close to Austin, Texas.
Yeah.
Okay.
Taylor Rodeo Arena, it's just like 30 minutes east of Austin.
Okay, well, that's great. Well, listen, we appreciate again very much both of you joining us for the show today. And you guys stay on the line, and we'll chat for just a little bit after the show ends. But right now, just a couple of things that we want to mention to folks. Next week, we have a tremendous show lined up with Templeton Thompson, and she just is a great young musician. We're going to have fun with that show, and then we're going to be riding the high country and talking about Tales from the Trails. We'll have some folks that will be sharing information that I'm sure you're going to enjoy from that. So Equestrian Legacy Radio comes to you live every Thursday at noon Central Time. And also, all of our programs are available to be heard on podcast. This show will be available about a half an hour after the show ends. So we want to thank you for listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio. And we're going to close the show today with a song that I think sums things up for all of us, and we do what we do for the love of horses. And this is Mary Ann Kennedy's This Love of Horses. Thanks for listening.
Love of horses that we share.